Minister of Finance Enoch Godongwana delivered his much-awaited first medium-term budget policy statement yesterday. Is it what we expected, and did it inspire the confidence South Africans need after a week of intense load shedding, in addition to the challenges posed during 2021? Hello, and welcome to OSA's podcast series. I am Margot G, and today we will be unpacking the much-anticipated first medium-term budget policy statement from our new Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana. 2021 has been a somewhat eventful year for the South African economy. The momentum of the pandemic has left the government in a tight fiscal position, while economic stagnation and rising unemployment has led to social unrest and riots in July. More recently, the outcome of the municipal elections has left the ANC with less than half of the national vote for the first time in their post-apartheid history. As the global economy is starting to recover from the pandemic, and there is talk of global inflation being on the rise, the finance minister is in a very difficult position, even more so since it is his first time he is delivering this speech. With us today is Isaiah Mhlange, our own fellow and chief economist at Alexander Forbes, and we will be unpacking whether or not this medium-term budget policy statement has met expectations. In addition to writing many columns in the Business Day Live and News 24, Isaiah has had significant experience in both the IMF and also National Treasury. Welcome to our show again, Isaiah. It is a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Magu, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So we know this MTBPS has been much anticipated, and seeing that it was the Minister of Finance's first one, people were not expecting too much deviance from the norm. Upon listening to it, the budget seemed very business friendly. What was the general consensus of the budget and how was it received by the public?
Look, I think as the finance minister alluded in one of his comments, that the difference between him and the former finance minister Tito Mboweni is that he has better shoes. Essentially, which just means in terms of the fiscal framework, it's still the same as that which was tabled by former Minister Tito Mboweni in February. That is, by and large, the essence of this MTBPS. But there are a couple of things that I think the general public would have picked up. One, I think it's positive for businesses. So depending on where you sit within the political spectrum, if you are you are a business person, it will be positive for you. But for the trade unions, for instance, it's likely to be received in a negative tone, especially because there was no commitment for increasing social spending, particularly around the universal basic income grant. That will be frowned upon by those that are on the left of the political spectrum. But I think the view that government took is to say we cannot commit to new social spending without the necessary tax revenues to fund them, which is the right posture that we need to see. So by overall, it was positive. The markets liked it. Bond yields declined following the minister's speech. The currency also appreciated, which means it was positive from a business perspective.
Okay, very interesting. And I like what you say about, what people were expecting with the finance minister, because if we look at his background, he did spend a significant amount of time. He was the chairperson of the board of the Development Bank of Southern Africa, and he was also the general secretary of South Africa's largest trade union between 1993 and 1997. So there may have been some expectation from unions for him to have had more of a stronger take on their views. And if we look at how he sort of reacted to the social pressures, where are we in terms of these social grants and funding for businesses after the riots and all the difficulties that we've posed after such a challenging year?
Look, maybe before I respond to that, let me say this. Given the history of the finance minister Godongwana that you just alluded to, a long history dealing with economic policy, but also a long history in the trade union movement. So he understands both sides that is required, particularly in his position. He is possibly the longest, is possibly, you know, the only minister with the longest training to become finance minister than all the ministers we've had, given that history. We can go back to, you know, minister, former minister Trevor Manuel, when he became a minister first in the cabinet. They had very short training or experience. You can also take Minister Mboweni when he became Minister of Labor, also a little bit short, you know, practical training. And the same with Pravin Gordhan, the same with Minister Ntlantlanene, and the same with Minister Malusi Gigaba. But if you look at Minister Godongwan, he has been the chair of the Economic Transformation Committee of the ruling party for over a decade, dealing with economic policy. So for me, you know, I was not surprised to see how calm his response to social pressures, you know, he was in the budget, because he has been training for this for a very long time. That's why, you know, we didn't see you know, the budget conceding to this social pressure to spend on increasing social grants, or increasing, you know, or introducing a basic income grant. He was able to navigate that, you know, political discussions with his colleagues. So delayed to the February 2022 budget, but all those social spending needs are going to be, you know, assessed with revenues in mind, to say if we are able to generate new tax revenues, we can then consider. But the other thing politically for this year that might have played part is there is this sense of a 5% economic growth rate. So it somehow can provide a sense that things are all well, revenues are, you know, running ahead of budgets because of commodity prices. So for some that have a very short term, you know, a view, they might say, let's go and spend because the economy is booming. It's a 5% growth after all. But forgetting that this 5% is a combination of things that may not repeat. First, it's the base effects from last year's contraction. Secondly, it's a commodity price, a cyclical recovery that is unlikely to be repeated. So, you know, those needs to be taken into account. But then if we look into next year, by the time the budget is tabled in February, we will not be talking about 5% economic growth. We'll be talking about a 2% economic growth, which means psychologically, there's going to be a change in what is going to be expected as far as revenues are concerned. And that is going to lessen the pressure for a push to spend on social security in one way or the other.
Yes. And it's very important that I think both sides of the, all aspects of the political spectrum are taken into consideration with this. And I think, you know, like you say, this experience matters more than ever now, because they are very difficult times. And if, you know, at times like this, we need to be pragmatic and honest and take a very direct approach so that we can go through the painful growth points that we need to, so that we can secure a more positive long-term future. And as we know, the budget, the fiscal position has been in a very difficult position. And after the previous medium-term budget speech in February, we learned that there was a windfall of tax money due to that unexpected boom in commodities. And I remember we strongly emphasized the importance of, you know, the difference between permanent incomes and expenditures and non-permanent incomes and expenditures. And when we look at that over the past year, was the money well spent? And what does the nature of the fiscal position look like over the next few months?
Look, I think the money was well spent. If we just look at some of the obvious thing that comes up is, you know, fixed investment is now expected to accelerate for three consecutive years, following more than 3 years of contraction before the pandemic. That is very positive, because that's where future economic growth is going to come from. And again, if you look in terms of government spending, is now projected to contract for three consecutive years, and even more than what was expected at the time of the budget. This following more than 3 years of real growth that has been above 1% in real terms consecutively over the past 3 or more years before the pandemic. So that shift from current spending to investment is visible in the budget. So it's money well spent. But again, if you look differently, again, from the consolidated spending on average between 2021-2022 fiscal year to 2024-2025, you can see that community development continues to grow 5.5% annual average in nominal terms. Economic development, where much of the infrastructure spending sits, continues to grow at 5.4% on annual on average annually in nominal terms, and that continues, you know. So that is money well spent in investment that is going to crowd in the private sector. So that is really, really, really good. Social wage has been maintained. There is a slight moderation, but it has largely been maintained, which means there's also a recognition that we need to cushion, those that have been badly impacted by the pandemic.
Yes, and I liked your article that you released in the Business Day this morning with what did you say, changing from lamb chops to lunch bars. And that was, I think also a good way of explaining how the changes in government spending are sort of taking place and which will contribute to a healthier budget in the long term, at least.
Yeah, indeed. It's an anecdote that was quite striking for me, which I think it simplifies our understanding of how the budget can be interpreted. You know, cutting the perks but still keeping the most important thing to give you energy. So it's the same thing, cutting the perks in the budget but still keeping the fundamentals that grounds the economy for better growth in future.
Yes. And I mean, growth is the big question at the moment, and it depends very heavily on the structural reforms that, contribute to this friendly environment. And, the positive nature of this budget speech is very welcome for this current situation. And so he delivered on this, he managed to inspire confidence, and we've looking at all this fixed investment is looking at a stable investment going forward, which is fantastic.
I think he managed to deliver. I have always thought that beyond the immediate numbers that we expected in the budget, like fiscal deficit must narrow, the debt to GDP ratio must also be stable in the medium term, at a much lower level than what was expected initially. The most important thing has always been the growth story, because the medium to long-term growth story is the one that is going to underpin much of what we do as a country going forward. And that requires economic reforms to be implemented. It's not really new reforms. We already know these reforms. Way back from the National Treasury Growth Paper to the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan that was announced by the President a couple of years ago. Those reforms are contained there, but they have not been implemented. There have not been timeframes for some of the reforms. What this MTPPS does is to put timeframes to say, we are going to be implementing this at this time, and most of them, they are in 2022. So they're now providing a yardstick upon which the private sector, civil society, businesses, individuals are going to hold government accountable to say, you said in the medium term budget policy statement, you are going to implement the rollout of spectrum. You're going to make it easy for fiber networks to be rolled out to communities in March 2022. Or you're going to fix the water boards. You're going to make sure that single-use licenses are going to be issued for water use, by October 2022. Mm. And then you are going to make sure that, Transnet is able to allow the private sector to participate in its rail system and put their own wagons to make sure that the volume and capacity of transportation of bulk goods moves from road to rail, sometime in 2022. So that then can be measured. At the end of 2022, the private sector or civil society is going to look back and say, what have you achieved over this year that you said you are going to do? And that if government manages to implement those reforms, it's a significant confidence booster. It can actually attract or stimulate private sector investment in the economy. So that is quite good, which they did in the MTBPS, a commitment to timeframes for implementation of economic reforms.
Definitely. And I think it will allow us to harness the more broad strength in our economy, especially if government spending is going down. We're going to have to rely more on this investment, which you mentioned, and then the consumer behavior, as well as the international imports, exports, and our aggregate demand. And if Transnet and borders and business friendly environment can all come together, then we will be less dependent on sort of the nature of that government spending and more resilient. So it would be fantastic if there can be some accountability to these reforms being implemented, and hopefully 2022 is our year of making it happen. Now, we did a poll on social media, and at the time of recording, so this morning, it was sitting at 62% of people were expecting to hear from the Minister of Finance about Eskom and renewable energy. This comes at a time after we were allocated significant funding, about 131 billion rand from the COP26 conference on climate change this year. And that will help, that is with the view to wean off coal electricity and move towards renewable ones. What did the Minister of Finance say about this issue, and did he meet our expectations there?
Look, I think in the midst of load shedding, it's quite possible that some people did not even hear the speech because they were in load shedding. But in the midst of that load shedding, people would have expected to hear more about Eskom. But I think it is the wrong thing that we would have expected. We should have expected to hear more about the energy security of the country. So much more broader than looking at an individual entity. We already know the issues at Eskom. High debt, its power plants failing time and again, the breakdown and unplanned taking a lot of power off the grid, leading us to stage four load shedding for a couple of days. That we already know. And the Eskom leadership has been providing us with updates on what's happening. So there was no new information that he could have provided. Suffice to say, as far as the conference of parties conference in Glasgow and its commitments to provide some pledges of $8.5 billion to South Africa to help it to transition away from coal to renewable energy, that is good. But there's still a lot that we do not understand, a lot that we don't know about that agreement. How much is going to be grants? How much is going to be loans? How are those loans going to be treated, and how whether they're going to eventually back up to the state through guarantees in one way or the other, if we just look at the current independent power producer agreements and also even Eskom's actual debt, much of which is guaranteed by the state. So there's still quite a lot that we don't know. A lot of conditionalities that are going to come with that. So let's wait and see how the actual structure and the contracting is going to look like for us to get the full impact. But indeed, a transition from coal to renewable, it has to happen. But how fast? That is a debatable matter, given that about 115,000 people that live off the coal value chain system are going to be impacted. That is directly. Indirectly, over 600,000 people are going to be impacted. So any deal that is not going to solve for those is not going to be just. So we want to see how just all those deals are going to be.
Yes, hopefully the transition can include a transition with those guys into something sustainable and renewable.
Absolutely. But the finance minister actually didn't touch much on that, on the Eskom and the renewable energy and the 8.5 billion. He didn't touch much because simply there isn't much information for him to work with. So perhaps in the budget next year, we are likely to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's still very, very fresh and not even a few weeks old. So it's allowed. So something which we have been expecting for a little while is, as the economy will be opening up after the whole pandemic, and this is in South Africa and also globally, there has been expectations of inflation, which we also sometimes refer to as the poor man's tax. Dare I ask, what were the outcomes from this speech on taxes going forward, and how will, and what can consumers expect between inflation and taxes? Are we going to have a crunch that's coming? Is this part of the growing pains that we need?
Look, if we just look in terms of inflation expectations in the budget, they aren't that different to what the SARB is expecting. So for this calendar year that is ending in a month and a half, 4.5% average, not too far from the SARB's forecast of about roughly 4.4%. Next year, a slight moderation. Actually, we can say over the medium term, there is a 4.3% average inflation. So we don't have an inflation problem, fortunately, in SA, compared to what we are seeing in some of the emerging markets and advanced economies, where inflation has been increasing rapidly. The US, for instance, inflation went up to 6.4%, which is the highest in many, many years. Core inflation rising about 4%, the highest also in many, many years. So the debate about inflation globally, while it has shifted from transitory to maybe persistent, locally inflation remained very, very, very muted around the midpoint of the SARB, which is quite fortunate. As far as taxes are concerned, normally tax policy is not announced in the medium-term budget policy statement. It's normally announced in the budget in February. Okay. So we didn't hear any tax policy changes. Which is positive, but also if we just look in terms of the ability to increase taxes in a weak economy, it's very limited, because we have to look at how much taxes can we actually generate from each from each tax source relative to the potential negative implication raising taxes is going to have, which is a comment that the finance minister made to say, we have to look at the trade-offs, how much we get versus what damage it does to the economy. And I think there's very little room to actually increase taxes in an environment where economic growth is going to be low, below 2%. It's quite difficult. Already, South Africa is one of the economies within emerging markets that have the highest tax rates, which means we actually need to look the other way instead of increasing, we need to be considering to reduce the tax burden on consumers.
Yes, I suppose that would also contribute towards a more business-friendly environment for the individual and small businesses. That would definitely help. Thank you so much, Isaiah. So in a nutshell then, as we wrap up, what would you say are the three key takings from the medium-term budget speech?
So first, fortunate commodity prices helped South Africa to generate more than expected tax revenues, and which were used to cover the unexpected spending on relief following riots and third wave. So this is a government that cares. They cushioned communities from the harshest blows of all these shocks. So the idea that somehow National Treasury is anti-poor, we also need to dispel that. But also the idea that Treasury as an institution is outside of government, we also need to dispel that. A point that the finance minister highlighted, say this is a budget constructed by government. That's quite important. So what has government decided? We keep in the fiscal framework that was tabled in February. We shift spending towards investment to lay a good base for the economy to grow going forward, which is more important for the long term. And then the second one is let's keep within our means in terms of spending. We should not commit to new spending items that we have not yet identified the tax revenues to be to fund it. That for me was a very important shift which the finance minister made very clear, and in that respect, things such as universal basic income grant, they're going to be assessed relative to their ability to finance it. And lastly, this is a positive budget for markets, positive budget, a budget for business, in that it lays the beginning of a growth story that is going to lift investment going forward by putting timelines to economic reforms, which is something that we did not have previously. So quite a number of economic reforms that have a timeline for implementation in 2022. So we would have to hold government accountable on the basis of its own timelines.
Yes, very, very true. Thank you very much, Isaiah. So in a nutshell, we can see that government is controlling their spending in a very sensible way and working towards leveraging the broader strength of our economy and creating a business-friendly environment. So I think in three words, we could say positive, pragmatic, and punctual implementation. And I've managed to get three P's for that. So hopefully we can have those, take that forward going into the new year.
Absolutely. I think you summarize it well. And speedy implementation, that's what we should expect.
With lunch bars.
Indeed.
Well, thank you, Isaiah. It's always a pleasure to have you on our show. And for those of you wanting to hear more of Isaiah's views, please look at his articles in the Business Day Live, as I've mentioned. And this morning's one on lamb chops and lunch bars is a really good one. So we hope you enjoy. We look forward to watching these developments unfold, and we will revisit these issues after the next speech and possibly even sooner. I'm Margaret G, and this is the OSA podcast series. A big thank you to all our listeners. And should you wish to contact us, please email me at margo@econrsa.org or reach out to our socials. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe to our social media channels. Till next time.